Welcome to Season 2 of Fit to Be Radio, in which we're discussing biopsychosocial dimensions of fitness and physical activity. Fit to Be Radio is a production of Fit to Be Studio, which specializes in home workouts and e-courses for those dealing with diastasis recti. Slip your smartphone into your pocket and strap on your sneakers, and take us along for a walk while we talk. Or just grab your favorite drink and get on the floor and stretch. It's going to be a great show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fit to Be Radio. My name is Chris Benke. I'll be your host today. Joining me is Bethany Learn. She's the CEO and founder of Fit to Be Studio. As always, we also have a guest named Nemesis Graham. She is the founder of Mummy Fitness. She's an elite trainer with personal fitness nutrition. Very excited to talk to her today. Thank you for joining us, by the way. It's awesome to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so we were talking in the pre-show. Where are you located?
I live in Yellowknife in the Northwest Territories in Canada, which is about 200 miles south of the Arctic Circle.
Oh my goodness. So how is it up there right now?
It's cold. I can look out the window and it's snowing right now. Yeah. We have about 7 to 8 months of winter.
Wow. And how long have you been in Yellowknife?
For 12 years now.
And do you like that? Because 7 to 12 months, or you said 7 to 8 months?
Yeah, of winter.
It was of winter. You have to love winter to be okay with that.
Yes, that's what people tell you. You have to like get into the outside and get into the winter activities to really appreciate the winter here. Yeah. And it took me a few years to learn that.
Yeah. So, but you're saying you do love that now.
I do. It took me a while, but I do love being here. My three kids were born here. Friends here, kind of built a life. So
you are in. You have dug root. You put roots down.
Yeah.
So where did you come from before Yellowknife?
From England. I moved from Canterbury, England, to Yellowknife.
Okay.
This is the only Canadian city I've ever lived in.
Okay. That's awesome. And what brought you to that northern city?
My husband. He's a born and raised Yellowknifer.
Okay. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So you went from like moderate kind of, wet a little bit in England to all the way full in winter.
I've been taking like little steps. I was born in Nigeria. Like I was born near the equator. Yeah. So it was nice. Then we moved to England a little further away. It's a little cooler, a little damper. And then I came to Canada. It's like even colder.
You got to ease your way in. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Beth, how do you two know each other?
Well, we met online, mostly just connecting through various circles of diastasis recti experts and people puzzling this out over the last 10 years.
Okay.
I think it's been several years that I've been following her, and I know she's been following me, and we've had a few discussions along the way.
Yeah.
And we've really connected deeper recently through some controversial topics in terms of like surgery and when is that needed. And she has such a great perspective on surgery and hernia, and we just both have such a heart for really helping women right where they're at.
Yeah.
Without hurting them more.
Yeah. So you said controversial topics, which, you know, obviously that lights me up. Like, so what are they? Because that's good for the show. Like, let's talk about it.
I think Anamisa and I both get pretty fired up about people on any part of the diastasis spectrum that make these all or nothing statements.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you have people that are like, all you got to do is 5,000 pulses a day and you'll heal.
Right.
You know, like that. And then you've got people who are like, well, surgery. Surgery is the only answer. Surgery is the only thing that can be. You just got to have surgery, 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 surgery. And it's like, no. Yeah.
Or never surgery, never surgery.
Yeah. And then you have the clinical superheroes that are like, you know, fly halfway around the world to come to my clinic because I will solve all your problems. And
right.
So I don't know, her and I kept connecting and bumping into each other on threads like that.
Yeah.
And realizing that we both have a lot in common when it comes to puzzling things out with our clients.
Yeah.
And offering approaches to fitness that are scalable
right.
and strategic.
Yeah.
So yeah. Now, wait, I want everybody to hear what anemocyte's name means. This also came up in the
Yeah, we're talking about that.
I was like, what are the origins of your name? Can you tell us that really quick?
It's Nigerian. The language is Ibibio, and it means happiness or sweetheart, depending. There's a couple of dialects, depending on how you translate it.
Yeah.
It's like it's sweetness from the inside is basically what it's directly translated as.
Oh, that's so good. Now, is that true? Is that true to you? Is that really true?
I mean, I like to think so. Actually, growing up, I thought the happiness thing was ironic because I was like, I struggled as a child and I was like a very sad and like very depressed introvert. So I always find it ironic. But now, just kind of through fitness, I feel like I found myself and I feel free and I do feel happy. So I feel like I represent my name better as an adult.
Yes. Living into it. That's so good. That's
well, so good. One of my middle names is Grace, and I definitely have had to grow into that one.
That's my new favorite quote for this podcast, Beth. I definitely had to grow into that one.
In more ways than one.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, let's get into
it. Today we wanted to really dig into hernias and really talk about that from your kind of unique perspective. And so as we were, you know, kind of thinking about this beforehand in the pre-show, you know, what is kind of the high level when people talk about hernias? There are a lot of different kinds of hernias, and there are a lot of different causes, a lot of different symptoms, and a lot of different treatments, for sure. But I think people are generally uneducated about all that. So kind of at the high level, could we start off by doing a little bit of definition of hernias?
A hernia is a hole. Medically, that's what it means. It means there's a hole in the usually the fascia or the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. At the highest level, that's what's going on. There's a hole, and that shouldn't be there.
Yes.
My son had surgery when he was 2.5 for an inguinal hernia, and while they were in there, freaked me out because the surgeon came out to talk to me, and I thought for sure he died. But no, the surgeon just, because he pulled me into a side room, and I was like, oh my goodness. But he's like, oh, we actually looked at the other side, and he actually has a hernia on the other side as well. And he showed me a picture, a laparoscopic picture of what they had done on the one side and how it was still open on the other side, and asked my permission, please, to repair the other side. And so, you know, that's an inguinal hernia, which is typically in males caused because as the testicles descend through the layers of the obliques and other tissues embryologically, the passage doesn't always close behind that descent. That is why they think those happen. And then as they get older and they start to play, in his case, he was playing in the sandbox and started screaming bloody murder. And then you have hernias like umbilical hernias that happen right around your navel. You can have abdominal hernias that happen higher. Are there other, there's hiatal hernias that happen inside. Are there other kinds of hernias too?
Not that I can think of. Those are like the main ones that people tend to deal with. And then as postpartum women, it's usually an umbilical or an abdominal hernia of some sort.
Right. And you've dealt with that. I saw your pictures that you posted on your social media of when you were a child, and that was so interesting. Do you happen to have those where you could screen share those with you right now? And if not, that's fine. I forgot to even mention that before.
No, not on my laptop. It was on my phone, not on my computer. So I don't know how I would do that.
Well, okay. So
I could just hold the phone up.
Right. Well, if you follow her on Mummy, is it mummy.fitness?
Mummy_fitness
on Instagram, and scroll back a little ways. There's some pictures of her.
And we can link to that in the show notes.
Yeah,
too.
We can totally do that. Yeah, but
so that's the most common, right? The umbilical hernias.
Yeah, and yes, that's the most common one, and it's because what most people don't know is that an umbilical hernia is common because the belly button is actually a hole. Technically, the belly button itself is a hernia. So everybody is born with a technical umbilical hernia. And so in pregnancy, because everything stretches in pregnancy, that hole stretches too, which is why pregnant women will sometimes see their innie become an outie. And it's not that a hernia has been created. It's that the hole has gotten bigger, so that contents behind the hole, the fat and the intestines, are just protruding through, and it's more obvious. So it looks like an outie. It's just pushing the skin out. And at postpartum, as things heal, everything can come back together and just be as it was before pregnancy or similar. But sometimes it doesn't close, and sometimes it's just been stretched, or the hole has just become bigger, and so it stays postpartum. And that's why it's pretty common to get one after pregnancy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my belly button did that. There it is. So if you're watching, or you have time to skip over to Fit to Be, there she's holding up a picture of her little belly. How old were you in that picture?
5 months.
5 months old. So this is not a typical umbilical hernia or just an outie belly button. This was a serious herniation of your abdominal wall around the navel.
Yeah. Mine was a birth defect. So my umbilical hernia, which is, it's there because it's the hole that the umbilical cord connected you to your mother. So when the umbilical cord is removed when you're born, the hole just stays there and usually just gets smaller, and so it's not obvious. Right. It's just a birth defect, and I Googled it when I was trying to figure out diastasis recti and how all that stuff was related. According to Google, around 30% of children of African descent are born with a large umbilical hernia. And it's so significant in the picture because I had one hernia on top of the other. I have an umbilical hernia and then a para-umbilical hernia, which is just another hernia above that. And so it's two big bulges coming out of my belly.
Wow.
And just because the picture, I'm so small there, it's very noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Right. And did you ever have surgery to correct it?
I did, and then because I had surgery when I was 5, and because I was so young, I didn't understand what was happening. And the surgery wasn't because there was anything medically wrong with me. Surgery is that was the age I moved from England to Nigeria, from Nigeria to England. And in Nigeria, my younger sister actually has a small umbilical hernia. My cousin had one too. And just as a young child, it wasn't something abnormal, wasn't something I thought about. But in the English school, I was like an immigrant. I didn't speak the language, and I was the only black child there. And changing PE, like physical education, the kids noticed that my belly was obviously different, and kids don't know how to embrace anything that's different, so I was bullied a lot for it. And so my mum tells me that they opted for surgery because there was a point that I refused to take my clothes off in front of my parents. I wouldn't undress in front of anyone, and they thought it would affect me growing up, and they figured if they could fix it, it wouldn't be an issue. So I had surgery on it, not because it was medically a problem, but just because aesthetically it was challenging for me.
Right.
Okay.
Wow. So, that's hard. You know, kids are mean, actually.
Yeah.
You don't have enough problems when you're trying to culturally shift and all that stuff. So we talk a lot about, on our show, constantly tying back to fitness. We're tying back to diastases and things like this. It just seems kind of natural that there's a relation between diastases and hernias. Is that actually true? Is that assumption true?
I mean, there's no research to show that a diastasis causes a hernia, but
right.
just logically, because a diastasis is a stretching, usually a stretching of the fascia that connects the labs, and an umbilical hernia is a hole in that same fascia, it makes sense that if the fascia is thin, it may be weaker and more susceptible to tearing under high loads.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure, it's not going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
I like to compare it to, you know, old pair of nylons. You know, they get stretched out and pretty soon you got to run in your hose. And
yeah.
I tried on this pair of jeans at the store and they were so cute, but they had the holes in them already.
Yeah.
And then there was the one hole up near my thigh, and just the position of my thigh fat and the hole, it like forced
me.
Thigh fat out of this hole.
There's a little hernia going on there.
Yeah, that's how it was. And I think of it like a cellophane or plastic wrap. If you hold it and you tap it with your finger, it has some resistance. But if you stretch it and keep hitting it with the same amount of pressure, then it's going to tear the more stretched it is.
Exactly.
So that's kind of how, a thin stretch fascia may be more susceptible to tearing under like high levels of sustained intra-abdominal pressure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, it frustrates me that there's not more research done on this, but I read something in a forum recently. It was a diastasis surgery support group, and this gal said that, you know, she went in, she had a severe diastasis, and her surgeon told her that it wouldn't be covered through insurance because it was pregnancy-related. And I believe that was hugely eye-opening for me in the ongoing fight that women have to put their bodies back together after they have their babies when it comes to
how... I wonder if that's actually true or if he had bad...
Yeah, totally. I've seen it, but it's never been worded so precisely. Where, sorry, that's a side... It's pre-existing condition, side effect of pregnancy. It's just aesthetic anyways. We're not going to cover that. And it's like, what... But so...
Do you know if that's true? Do you know if that's true in Canada? Like, that's crazy weird, actually, that that wouldn't be covered.
Not from my experience either. I was told that my hernias were... I was told, too, like, my hernia is... Like, the diastasis, it was just aesthetic. It was just because everything stretched through in pregnancy. The hernias, and it's... Interesting, the lack of information, good information women actually get, because I didn't even realize what was happening with my belly till I was in my 30s and I researched it myself. My whole life I knew I had this weird bulge, but I didn't know why it happened. And after I had the surgery to close the hernias, I don't know at what point, within like that same year, they reopened again. And I never had a second surgery to fix it, and I never understood why it reopened. I never understood if there was a risk of reopening. I just had so much lack of understanding about my body. It frustrated me, and I feel like it fed into my negative body image. Like so many postpartum women don't understand what's happening with their body, and that feeds into their negative body image, because when you don't understand, you just feel broken, like there's something wrong with you.
So that kind of brings me to my next question, which is, so you had the surgery, but then they reopened after that, and you said you haven't had surgery. So can you talk a little bit about managing a hernias without surgery? Like, so what do you do? Like, how does that work?
It was the diastasis that kind of led me to Beth and Fit to Be, trying to figure out what I could do about it outside of surgery. And my reason that I was kind of like... A lot of women will be told, and I was told too, surgery is your only option. But I came from an experience of having an abdominal surgery as a child, and it was just a really, like, the whole experience was negative for me. And I thought, if there's a way I can avoid going through that again as an adult, I will.
Sure.
And so I was like holding on to exercise with everything, because for me, I felt like I needed it to work. And just kind of with diastasis, what it boils down to is the changes that are caused by intra-abdominal pressure. Mm-hmm. Every pregnant woman has some stretching because of the huge intra-abdominal pressure with pregnancy. And a hernia, that's also linked with intra-abdominal pressure. And hernias, it's a common cause is, it can be through associations of pregnancy, heavy lifting, and that's also often because of the huge amounts of pressure people use when lifting. Mm-hmm. So I kind of learned that the same way that you would manage a hernia is the same way that you would manage a diastasis. And it's also the same way that you would manage, similar ways you would manage a pelvic organ prolapse, because they're, when you're talking about an umbilical hernia, they're all conditions of the core. And a lot of those conditions are associated and linked to pressure management within the core. So if you figure out different ways to manage and distribute pressure within your core, it can help that. With prolapse, it's about finding ways to lift pressure off the pelvic floor rather than sending pressure down. With diastasis, it's finding a way to stop pressure coming out towards the midline. And that's the same with an umbilical hernia. You don't want to send significant amounts of pressure towards the midline, because that's going to force your stomach contents into that midline. Mm-hmm. And it might cause the hernia to be bigger. Mm-hmm. Which ironically, it's like a big hernia is actually less problematic than a small hernia, but aesthetically, you just don't want the hole to be bigger and bigger and bigger. There's ways that you can manage it.
Right.
Oh, hold on. You just blew my mind just a little bit, because... Because I always hear back from my clients, you know, it's like, oh, you probably should have that evaluated by your doctor, by a surgeon. And often they come back and they're like, well, it's really small. They said it's non-surgical because it's really small.
Oh, yes, actually, yeah. It's the part of the reason that my hernia, it's been a blessing in disguise, I've never had any symptoms or any issues with it. Part of that, the reason is because they're so big. And our hernia, not some hernias, absolutely 100% require surgery. And you'll know your hernia requires surgery if you ever notice it, if it ever becomes sensitive to the touch, if it ever becomes red, if it ever becomes painful. And the reason is because a hernia is as a hole, and things are being pushed into that hole with the intestine, there's a risk of things becoming trapped. And small hernias are more potentially more risky than big hernias, because a small hole, and for an umbilical hernia, the stomach contents with pressure can get pushed into that hole and then the intestines can become trapped. So they go in and they don't come out. So it becomes pinched. When it becomes pinched, it starts losing blood supply and the app starts dying. And that's when it becomes sensitive and red and painful. And it can actually cause parts of your organ to die. And it can cause gangrene in your body. And it can lead to death. So 100%, if you ever have pain in your hernia, you need to go to the emergency room. Like, that's not a joke. But with a big hernia, it's harder for things to get trapped. And what happens with mine is things get pushed into it and they slip out, and they get pushed into it and they slip out. So a big hernia tends to be like asymptomatic. It doesn't cause any issues. A small hernia is more likely to cause issues in the long run. And so people often ask, what should I do about my hernia? Like, see a doctor to get it assessed. And if at any point it ever becomes painful, you need to, like, don't even wait till the next day. Go to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so let's define big and small real quick. So what do you mean by big and small?
I don't have a measurement. It's whether thing, it's basically, that small is, it's usually like less than a centimeter, because that's where the risk of entrapment, the risk of things just not being able to come back out of it. So it's usually, and it's usually when people have small hernias that they'll tend to report that they have, like, it bothers them, it's irritable, and
Because that was my son.
A hernia.
I mean, I was like, what is wrong with my kid? Because my normally cheerful 2-year-old suddenly was like arching his back and purple in the face, screaming bloody murder. And it was like a full 5 minutes before I thought, okay, I'm going to strip him because clearly something's going on here.
Right.
And there was like, it was the size of an egg sticking out right above his hip. And my sister is a medical assistant. And, you know, in the moment, I didn't even think about, like, emergency rooms. I just called my sister. I'm like, what on earth? What do I do? And she's all, oh, that sounds like a hernia. Push it back in. And it was crazy because I did that, and it was the weirdest feeling under my fingertips. Instantly, he was fine.
Yeah.
That thing that kids do where they're done crying and they wiggle off your lap and they go back to playing like nothing just happens.
Right, right. So yeah. the part that stuck out, the insides that came out, was the size of an egg, but the hole itself might have been very small, right?
And looking back, like, I remember that feeling of, like, I could feel, and I would sometimes palpate it, you know. And then we met with a surgeon. He didn't have surgery for a good couple months. When we first met with the surgeon, he's like, how do you know this is a hernia? Did you have it scanned? And I described what happened, and he goes, oh yeah, that's a hernia. All right, we'll schedule you. Yeah.
And you can push it back in, and that's what, because the risk is really stuff just being stuck. So you can push it back in, so whatever was being pushed into it is not going to lose blood supply. But if you can't push it back in and it's just there, and then that's something that needs to be addressed. Because, I mean, every single organ in your body needs oxygen, and when it starts losing oxygen, it starts dying.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said that was a concern, and the reason we operate on him at early age is because they're like, you know, he's a kid, he's not going to initially know to push it back in himself. Right. And better to repair this now. And so, and he's got it.
Ironically, it's like, people are often worried about umbilical hernias for infants, and you can't grow out of that. And that was kind of, it was partly a lack of understanding from my parents, and them just not wanting me to have, like, mental issues or self image issues because of it. But with an umbilical hernia, they usually self-resolves with between the first 5 to 8 years of life. Because as you grow older, the fascia grows stronger, the hole reduces, and it can go to a normal size. And my younger sister's an example of that. She had an umbilical hernia too, and now she has what looks like a small outer belly button. And my male cousin, was in the same situation. So there was a point I had, like, a little bit of resentment too, because I was like, I had my surgery when I was 5. Like, my body was still so immature. I wonder if it would have resolved itself somewhat if it had just been left alone. And then the thing with surgeries that people don't understand is they think surgery will just fix everything, but you're cutting into the tissue. So now you're creating scar tissue. You're creating a situation where your body has to heal all the more. So, like, I feel like my body was healing, was still growing. It was still developing as a 5-year-old, but now I had this surgery and that added more things to it. And I was never given physiotherapy. I was never told, I didn't understand my body. So I didn't know, I don't know, because there's so many questions. Like, maybe if I would have understood how to manage pressure, maybe it wouldn't have reopened. You just have so many maybe, what ifs, and that's frustrating. Right.
Yep.
So we talk a lot about, safely closing diastasis gap through non-surgical ways. And we're definitely not of the kind of thinking that that's the only way. You should never do surgery. There's definitely different types of approach for different types of people and all of that. But the question is, will closing your diastases, will that, like, how does that affect, like, specifically umbilical hernia? Like, what do you think on that?
I think if the diastasis reduces in size, it may make the gap, the hernia look smaller. I don't know if it would actually be smaller because it is a hole. Right. And the whole umbilical hernia will never close or be closed without surgery. It doesn't mean that you need surgery. It just means you have to know that aesthetically it's going to be there unless somebody like stitches it together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas and it's kind of the same as diastasis as well, because a hernia can just, it can be aesthetic and it doesn't need surgery. A diastasis to some extent can be aesthetic, but a hernia can also be problematic and absolutely need surgery, and a diastasis can absolutely need surgery too, and there's not one clear answer for people.
Right. That makes so much sense.
You know, one study I would love to see done, and I'm really hoping that the survey that we're doing on Fit to Be and hoping to publish in the next couple of years with the results, we have over 2,000 results. It's a massive survey of people around the world. It will be a pilot study that then we hope will birth other studies. And one of those I would love to see happen is, let's take some women who have hernia and severe diastases, and let's put them into a protocol. And then let's not only measure their diastases width, but let's also, and their depth and all that, but let's also look at their hernia. Because we can look at the depth of things. We can see that when somebody engages their core correctly, the thickness of the linea alba changes. It stimulates that fascia. And over time, as diastases heal, we often do see how that thickness can improve, because we know now that the fascia can heal. It just takes a long time, and it takes a lot of consistency and genetics help and rest and nutrition and hydration and all the things, right?
Yeah.
But obviously there's some severe cases outside of that where you can apply all the protocols and that fascia is so thinned out and so disconnected that it's not going to go anywhere. But I would love to see something like that done where...
Okay, so interesting.
Right, because clinically... I talking with people like Kelly from the tummy team, or all the other physical therapists we've interviewed on here, what they notice underneath their fingers is that hernias don't close, but they seem to get thicker and more palpable. And it's almost like somebody, I think it was Kelly, said, it feels almost like it's a purse, where the purse string, as the fascia thickens, the purse string is kind of closing and drawing the edges a little bit, or the edges are more definable. What do you think of that theory?
Well, and I'm curious too, if it ties into what you were talking about earlier with the pressure management as well.
Oh yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I think my hernia appears smaller if I'm actively engaging my core than if it's relaxed, but it's because the muscles are pushing things together versus relaxed, and kind of things are coming out a little bit and there's more tension. With the pressure thing, some things that when I began training with it to kind of figure out how much pressure I was sending towards my midline is just feeling the hernia. And like, if you're doing an activity and you're feeling it, and even if it's bulging and it's soft, it's just a reaction to the pressure's being sent towards your midline, but it's not unmanageable. It's when you're doing exercise and you've touched the hernia and it's hard, and that's kind of can be an indication that you're reaching the maximal capacity and a lot of force is being sent towards your midline, which is why it feels so hard. So you want it to stay soft during even hard lifts. Even when it's bulging and you press into it, it should be soft and not kind of resist the push.
Interesting.
So with a hernia, you're going to see the pressure changes in your midline because it's a hole and there's no way for it to not bulge. People will write that it's bad that their hernia is bulging. It's going to show it, but it's like, how much is it bulging? How much pressure is being sent towards your midline? And that's like diastasis too, with the doming or the tenting down the midline. There's some activities, and depending on the severity of your diastasis, there might be no way you can avoid tenting or doming no matter what you do, but it's not the tenting or doming that's bad. It's the extent of the tenting or the doming.
Right. Mm. That makes sense.
That's a good clarifying statement. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, and I know you and I discussed as well that we had this conversation privately on Instagram after bumping into each other again on some thread. But like in my midline, right below my ribs, sometimes when I move, I see like a little bit of a ridge there, but it's for it. It's not my fascia is completely closed down. I had a 3.5 finger gap. It wasn't super severe. It was deep, but my body responded really well to rehab. I didn't have any herniations, and I'm except for like maybe a knuckles width right around my navel. Everything is really healed up nicely, but sometimes when I move, there still is a little bit of a ridge there, but it's really firm. It's like really firm and hard. It's not, and I've been checked multiple times because like sometimes it bugs me and I'll go back like, okay, I just want to make sure. Like, I just want to make sure what's going on here. And, Kelly thinks that it's scar tissue. And so she has had me massaging it. She's like, when you notice it, see if you can massage that and send it some, you know, biofeedback and see if you can get it to relax while you're maintaining that position.
Huh.
Whatever position is making it do that, play around with the pressure in that position. What are your ribs doing? Maybe you are bracing without realizing it. And so I have been messing with it. And sure enough, it usually happens when I move and I'm not managing my pressure quite right. But am I concerned about it? No, because I know that my fascia is stronger now. And so that little bit of tenting is not a concern for me where I'm at.
Yeah.
Huh. Everybody's a little different.
So I know that the umbilical hernia is actually quite common. So I guess the question for you both really would be, as people are listening to this and they're thinking, you know, I think that's me, but they don't have any like real painful symptoms. Cause hopefully if people are dealing with pain and redness and hardness, like you're talking about, they'll immediately go to the doctor. Okay. So if you're experiencing any of that, like, don't screw around with it. But for the other people that are like, I think maybe what they're talking about, I might be suffering with. What is your advice to that person? Like, what should they do? How should they kind of check? Should they go see a professional? If they do, is it a PT? Is it a doctor? Like, what's your advice?
Mm-hmm. Maybe if you have a hernia, it's good to go see your doctor just to have it looked at, confirmed. If they tell you that you have a hernia and you're concerned about how just exercise, it depends if you were talking about a postpartum woman. Every postpartum woman should go see a pelvic floor physiotherapist, and I wish that doctors would recommend that routinely, because if you went to see a pelvic floor physiotherapist, they could assess you, they could tell you about the diastasis, they could tell you about a hernia, they could teach you some pressure management techniques which would help address how symptomatic both things were. They could check your pelvic floor, because it's like all these things are related, and this is why so many women experience all these things, because 80% of women will have a child in their life, so 80% of the population have a chance of experiencing these correlated issues of the female population.
Right.
Yeah. Now you mentioned like palpating that area while you're exercising, and I've seen you do that through your videos, and I love that. I do a similar thing with my belly still. When I first got core rehab, my older sister was like, "Stop feeling your belly all the time. It's disturbing."
I can completely hear her doing that.
Right. Cool. But I love how you do that in several of your videos. Would you mind demonstrating that really quick?
Yeah, I think too it's important, because it's less scary. And I talked to a friend about this, about the love languages, and one of the love languages is touch. We're talking about how important it is for people to touch their bodies and learn how to feel comfortable with it. And they see like the doming or the diastasis and it looks so scary. I'm like, put your hands on it, touch it, feel it, like don't be afraid of it. And mine, I can stand up to show my butt. It depends what I do, because there's the hernia there, and if I can like bear down and it bulges out, and if I push it here, it's fairly hard because I'm sending pressure straight out. Or if I can engage my core with an exhale and it still bulges out, but I push it, I can get it softer, get more tension. So just based on that, it looks the same. Wish you could see, but this versus this, it's just more resistance. There's more pressure being sent. And so whatever I do, if I'm creating, because what I was doing was what would be known as, I guess, bracing, or like a little bit of a valsalva when you inhale and then tense your abs. And so that's sending the pressure straight out. And when I do that, my hernia is hard to the touch. Mm-hmm. Connection breath, which is something that's taught to a lot of postpartum women, if you loosen your core abs on the exhale. So with the second way, I would exhale and then contract my muscles. So I'm still creating, every time you engage your core muscles, you're increasing pressure within your core. So I'm still creating pressure, but it's not as high as the bracing, or it's not as high as the Valsalva, so the hernia is soft. Right. But both those techniques, I can lift a heavy weight. I was just at the gym today testing my deadlift max, and I lifted 252 pounds. And I can do that. Oh. And with my hernia being soft, I could also lift that same weight with a Valsalva, which is a technique people use to lift heavy weights because it creates high pressure within the core. But I would, when I do that, I can feel internally the pressure towards my hernia. It feels uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good. With 250 pounds with an exhale and bracing it in the way that feels good, I felt supported and I felt like nothing in my core. I think people get scared sometimes because they feel they can, the hernia might not be painful, but depending on what they do, what exercises they do, it might feel uncomfortable, it might feel awkward, it might feel like, I think people are pretty aware of what doesn't feel right within their body.
Right.
So they become afraid of movement or afraid to do these things. And you read a lot, don't lift heavy weights with a hernia. And just like diastasis, it's all related. It's not the exercise you're doing or even the weight you're lifting, how you're doing it. It's how you're managing the pressure. And there's so many different ways to manage pressure. And if this way is making you feel unsupported, it's uncomfortable, it's painful, then try a different way. It doesn't mean you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's much more empowering to women being told to go to a physiotherapist or an exercise professional and they're struggling with something, rather than say, you can never do this again. Why don't you go swimming? Why don't you go on the treadmill if someone's into CrossFit or lifting heavy weights? It's not going to help them, and it will feed into their negative body image, because I feel like part of learning how to embrace your body is feeling powerful in it. So what helps women is showing them different strategies. And we get a lot of the surgery versus no surgery, and it's frustrating when a woman says, I have diastasis recti, and someone's like, you need surgery, or someone says, I have a hernia, it doesn't hurt me, and people are like, you need surgery, because you don't know. It depends. Some people may need surgery if they try different strategies and it doesn't work for them, but some strategies that come before surgery are going to work for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I love the approach of, you know, get the physical therapy and do some of that muscle retraining, like what you and I offer to in concert with physical therapy, because you never know. And that is enough to resolve and build your strength and help you with the aesthetic factor. And maybe you'll find peace along the way and not have to spend 10 or 15 grand out of your own pocket, because insurance doesn't cover that where we are, on fixing this. And God bless you if that's what you choose to do. And that's what's best.
Plus, there's a lot of additional recovery that comes along with the surgery as well.
Yeah.
That you often aren't really informed about.
No. Yeah, and the thing is, because I've heard had people even message me and say, why are you so anti-surgery? And I'm absolutely not anti-surgery. It just should not be the first thing you do. And with my experience with the hernia too, and it's common for people to have multiple surgeries on a hernia, because they're often not sent to rehab. They're often not sent to a physio. It's like, I'm going to close this hole up, go back and do what you need. But a hernia is a pressure man. It's caused by sustained amounts of intra-abdominal pressure. It might be caused by just pressure management techniques that don't work well for you. So if you have surgery on the hernia, but you're still using those same things, that surgery has actually made that area weaker, because now you've had somebody like put stitches in it, change it. It's weaker than it even was before the surgery. And so if you don't know different ways to manage pressure within your core, the hernia is going to open again. You're going to go to more surgery, and the more surgery you have, the more scar tissue you have. And it just kind of builds on the problems that people have, and they don't necessarily realize that.
Right.
And surgery can be great, but it means you need to have the techniques before surgery, know how to change the way that you manage pressure so the hernia doesn't feel painful or uncomfortable when you're doing certain activities. Yeah. Then have the surgery and then use those strategies that are going to take pressure away from your midline while it heals and support you better.
Yes. Well, and also the PT just sets you up for better muscle circulation. And let's say you've got like an 8-centimeter wide diastasis, and you've got a really bad umbilical hernia, and you go through PT, And you regain some tension in your fascia, and your diastasis narrows by even 1 or 2 centimeters before surgery, you still opt to have surgery, that still is less pressure in your core. That's a lot of pre-healing, circulation, juicier muscles. more connected muscles so that when the surgeon does knit you back together, you're going to wake up
faster.
Yeah, you're going to heal faster.
Yeah. I mean, and the rehab is even good just for getting building a connection with your body, because a lot of people don't have aren't really aware of what's going on in their body, and they don't have that mind to muscle core connection. When you have surgery, it's going to change your relationship with your body too, so it's good to have a foundation, a connection that you can kind of tap back into and know how your body felt before the surgery and know how these different strategies felt in your core before the surgery, and see how those things apply after surgery. Maybe you'll have to change again, but it's good to have something to tap into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the bottom line of all this is to be open-minded and educated, highly educated, and don't just look to one thing. Have a network of support. Make sure that your professional that you're looking at has a network of support.
And just learn before you make a decision, because what stopped making me fearful of my hernia was understanding what it is. What stopped making me fearful of the diastasis was just understanding what it is and understanding what I could do to change the way things presented itself in my body. And that, just that understanding, took away fear, and that helps me make decisions that are best for me. And my, the decisions I make for my body might not be best for someone else's body, but if you know your body, you know what's right for you. And that's where education comes in.
So it sounds like the most powerful thing that can be done is some self-education and not being afraid of it. And that is true for so many things, but it's still such a big gap. And talking to a healthcare professional or someone, and their immediate response is, you know, do this surgery or whatever, that can be a pretty dangerous, that can be pretty dangerous advice without a full well-rounded education on the whole topic. So,
Yeah, it all plays into the bigger picture. And, I like the growth mindset phrase of like right now, like your fitness choices might not be the best right now. You can return to them maybe later once you dial in some better strategies. So if something's not working for you right now, or not working for you yet, get help and find somebody that can help you make it work for you. Yeah. Well, we really appreciate Anemis joining us. It looks like she had to go. It's been an awesome show. She is a quality professional. We'll drop her links in the show notes. We hope you guys all check it out. She is amazing. Make sure you follow her on Instagram. She's got quality content. I really enjoy her stuff. Thanks again.
Friends and fans, if our podcast floats your goat, you should subscribe to Fit to Be Radio and also follow us on Twitter at Fit to Be, on Instagram at Fit to Be Studio, and on Facebook via Fit to Be Tummy Safe Fitness. That's my rooster. I'd also love for you to join fittobe.com so you can work out with me. Plus, that's how we pay our bills that keep our lights on, providing family-friendly workouts that help you make a strategic return to fitness. See you there.